Freddie?
Yes, thanks, Carla, and thanks to you, Howard, for that, the speech. Perhaps the risk of offending some people, I think at times we of some subjects at times. The information that Howard tells us about the mistreatment of animals, etc., of course is abhorrent. And where it can be avoided to as great extent as possible, so it should. It should be avoided. It shouldn't be anything inhuman if it can be avoided. I mean, but I can't immediately see this now because I'm not a researcher in terms of looking at testing animals for various reasons, whatever it might be. And whilst the days have gone now, I think, of hound dogs being made to smoke, etc., they've found alternative methods of doing things. I don't feel that at any time that Howard was actually advocating that seeking to impose non-meat eating on society, but was raising very valid questions on it. I mean, I make it clear now, I enjoy eating meat. I think there's nothing like a nice steak. If before it gets on the plate, if animals are being ill-treated. But I think also Adam makes points on it also. We had a discussion the other evening about freedom of speech. If people wish to eat meat, they should be free to be able to eat meat. If it's available, and at all times, of course, concentrating on the fact that farming should be as humane as it possibly can be. Because we can also look at things like, I enjoy going fishing at times, not so much these days. But I used to enjoy going fishing, catching a fish, getting it on the plate, you know, within an hour or two of catching it. Would that be regarded as inhuman also now then to the 10, 15, 20 million fishermen that people go fishing here? Is that something that would be frowned upon? Say, I don't think we should be so restrictive in looking what we mean is how it is produced is the factors for me more than anything. And again, Paddy makes very valid points, I think, on this question of the environment. So, you know, on the whole, I can't see me stopping eating meat. But then again, we're not going to have socialism tomorrow anyway, at least not as far as I know. I don't have any more to say on it just now.
Thanks, Freddie. Howard, do you want to comment?
Well, I suppose all I want to say is that in my view, catching a fish by sort of, you know, lodging a hook in its jaw and then either letting it sort of gasp to death or banging it on the head and then taking it home and eating it. Yeah, I think that is inhumane. I have to say that, personal opinion. Nothing against the comrade who said it, obviously, but that is how I personally view things. In, if you like, a moral way. Call it moral, if you like.
Okay. Dougie?
Yeah, I'm a meat eater and I probably do much meat for my health. I mean, I agree with Paddy, the environmental argument is quite good against meat production. And what Howard said about all the cruelty that goes on is terrible. But as you say, after the social conditioning, I was brought up in a family that ate meat. If I'd have been brought up in a family that was vegetarian or vegan, things might have turned out differently. So it is difficult, really, you know. I don't know. I mean, in the future, I think people will eat a lot less meat because it's good for the environment not to do that, especially greenhouse gases and all the deforestation that goes on to produce soya to feed the cattle. It's just not efficient, really, you know. So I mean, I'll certainly think about eating less meat from what I heard tonight. So I suppose if that's a success for the talk, Well, hopefully that's good, right? I mean, I agree with Howard. But I still think socialists do have moral arguments, right? You know, I agree with Mark, you know, that we have a moral argument against capitalism because it's inhuman, right? You know, it's not a society that values people. It values profit before people, and it values profit before animals. So the sooner we get rid of capitalism, the better, right? But, I mean, I think things will change for the better if we do.
Thanks, Dougie. Paddy?
Well, just it's a couple of points there. I can't resist, sorry, Dougie, I can't resist responding to your remark about you were brought up in a meat-eating family. So was I, and so were probably most vegetarians. It's not the case that just because you were brought up that way, you can't change. Yeah, you can, if you want to.
Not by the way, I remember you eating my turkey pie when I lived with you on West Road. So I
yeah, exactly.
I know you've changed.
And on the sort of more general point about, what I eat, it's my own business and nobody else's. I mean, let's just extrapolate that out a minute. I enjoy something, so it's none of your damn business what I do. Well, you know, tell that to murderers, tell that to rapists or paedophiles, tell that to anybody who does anything antisocial or unsustainable. And this comes back to this sustainability argument. If you do something that is unsustainable from a global environmental point of view, that is a matter for the public, for public debate. It is not a private matter. You don't get off with that excuse. But I'll just go on to one other point. This is where I want to just kind of fly a bit of a kite here, because I said before I was, you know, not keen on the moral argument, and it's not because I'm not interested in it. I do feel the same sort of emotional reaction, you know, that's been described here. Mark said it, and, you know, Howard said it, you know, and I feel that as well. But I'm just saying I don't think it's the strongest argument. However, I don't think it's completely without merit, and I want to just put something forward that occurred to me a minute ago, which is that the party case is predicated on the idea that if people don't care about humans, how are they ever going to care about animals? In other words, humans come above animals in human priorities. That sort of seems intuitively so. You kind of assume it. However, what if it's the other way around? I wonder if it's the case that we've got things upside down. Now, the reason I say this is because I've met through my life a lot of people who seem to care a lot more about animals than they do about humans, sometimes in quite cold-blooded ways. I was told by a soldier once that he had no trouble killing humans, but he would never harm a hair on a cat's head. Now, that might be an extreme example, but one reason I think that people have got a lot more general concern about animals is because there's no question in their heads that animals are innocent. Animals cannot possibly be agents or co-agents or co-dependents in their own oppression. Now, you can't always say that about humans. Humans are sort of implicated in their own oppression in some way or other, but you cannot say that about animals ever. So sympathy for animals, I would suggest, is probably more universal than sympathy for humans, and that right across cultures right around the world. Now, that being the case, or that being my proposition, suppose we were to invert our argument, and instead of encouraging concern for animals based on a concern for humans, suppose we were to do it the other way around and encourage a solidarity of concern for humans by first appealing to a less controversial and more universal consensual concern for animals, i.e. You wouldn't treat a dog like this in capitalism, so let's not treat humans like this either. That's my proposal. There you go.
Thanks, Paddy.
Thanks,
Paddy.
Thanks, Paddy. No, that's very interesting. Thanks.
Okay. Now I'm going to use my privilege as chair. Just a couple of points. In answer to Vin about using, well, I think it was golf courses. I mean, we can feed the world as now. We can feed the world over and over. We destroy food and we dump stuff. So I don't think, if people want to play golf, let them play golf. I don't think we're going to need to use every single inch of space. I think, especially with in the future methods of production, I think we'll need less and less space to produce more and more food.
I was only joking about the golf.
I know you were. I know you were.
I wasn't about Manchester United, though.
I kind of agree with Freddie as well. It's not so much about whether we eat meat or not eat meat, but it certainly is about how we treat them and how we slaughter them. My last point is, what's wrong with having morals? You know, this party sometimes seems so cold that it's all, you know, economic. That's the party case. What's wrong with a bit of sympathy? What's wrong with a few morals? You know, it's what's wrong with a bit of heartfelt and saying that this is wrong? This is not a way to live. It's about empathy as well. And I think sometimes we come across certain, not all of us, but certain members come across as being a bit sort of cold. And I don't think that's very welcoming to the party either. Anyway, that's my little, I've said my piece.
Hear, hear.
Is that you, Lorna?
It is, yes. I was completely agreeing with what you're saying. And for the first time, I'm just introducing my partner to listening to this discussion, and we're really enjoying it. So great, and great to have so many people with so many thoughts that are compassionate in it.
Excellent, excellent. Moggy, did you want to come in?
Oh, yes, thanks. Thanks. Just going back to what Paddy said about half an hour ago, about if we stopped farming sheep and cows, we wouldn't be overrun with them because they just wouldn't be breeding that fast. So that was a very good point. The other thing is somebody talked about people owning animals. Well, lots of people own dogs, but the fact is nobody owns a cat. Of course, we all know cats own you and they make the rules and we choose to comply. So, you know, that's the thing about cats. This thing about controlling unwanted animals, if we just allow nature to take its course, we could lose a lot of species. For example, in New Zealand, we didn't have any mammals at all until the white population, westernized population, started arriving a couple of hundred years ago, bringing all their mammals with them. And they killed off an awful lot of our flightless birds. And so a lot of our native birds became extinct. And then possums came over from Australia. Possums are lovely. They're sweet and they're fluffy. And I've even kept them as pets. But they are a problem because they will kill off little baby birds. They will raid trees. They will strip all the buds and the leaves and the bark off trees. And they got out completely out of proportion in New Zealand. And so in a lot of areas, they had to do huge culling of these possums, which I think it's horrible. I hate to think of any animal being killed. If I had my way, I'd catch them all in live traps and ship them all back to Australia where they're protected. But they did become a problem in New Zealand because they don't have any natural enemies. And if you have a look on the, there's a website for Zealandia, which is a big bird sanctuary in Wellington. And so in order to set that up, they had to provide a predator-proof fence around a huge area and then kill off everything that was inside that fence so that it could then be set up as a bird sanctuary where birds could be safe. So this thing about if you just leave animals to just take their own natural course, we would have lost every one of our native birds by now. So I realized that, you know, they were introduced, these predators were introduced by people in the first place. If we want to get back to our native birds, then we have to either control them or get rid of them in some way or another. So, you know, I think it's cruel to kill them. I'd like to just move them somewhere else. But, of course, it's not practical to do that. So the city councils are killing them. But anyway, I'd be interested to hear other people's thoughts on that.
Thanks, Muggy. Paul?
Hi, Carla. Yeah, good on you, Howard. That was a very stimulating presentation. I think, as with everything, you know, there are lines to be drawn. In much the same way as the default position is in capitalism, where everything is done on the cheap and the interests of generating the highest profit, then so too would the opposite be the case in socialism, whereby animal welfare and well-being would be of paramount importance, perhaps not to the expense of human well-being. I think the line essentially has to be drawn between what we'd think of as animal welfare and animal cruelty, and they're certainly two, you know, very much poles apart. You know, I think none of us can fail to be horrified when we see, you know, year after year, the slaughter of baby seals in order to protect fish stocks, you know, and how they go about that. In other words, it's simply cheaper it's cheaper, costs almost nothing to hack a seal to death and let it die in its own pool of blood than it is to take a bullet to its brain. And likewise, you know, in the name of religion, the whole idea of sacrificing cattle the halal way, whereby, you know, an animal's throat is cut instead of, again, a short, sharp bolt to the brain, none of which is particularly pleasant. But at the same time, I don't think that as human beings we should lay down our rights to enjoy the pleasures that animals bring us both in life and after their demise. I'm a huge fan of meat. I love meat. There's very little meats that I don't enjoy the taste and the flavour of. But I also love animals dearly too. And when I see things happening like all these arseholes chasing around on their horses with their foxhounds, only to see a fox being culled at the end of it and ripped apart by those dogs, which themselves aren't particularly well looked after. You know, they're starved for days before they're set out in their packs. You know, wouldn't be the first time I've helped to unravel a foxhound actually ripped apart by barbed wire fencing. Managed to get it to the vets, but then all too often along will come the huntsmen and the pack hound leaders and just, you know, take the dog out because it's served its purpose and it's cheaper to kill it than what it is to pay for a vet's bill. So there are clearly issues there that have to be addressed. And I think that when socialism comes around, not only will we be better off as a human race and species, but so too will animals. Forget not as well how, of all of these experiments that we hear about, you know, in terms of, you know, the beauty industry, cigarette smokes and such like, there are also some very positive things that have come about that have benefited the human race from animal experiments. And I can vouch for one in particular, and it's a product that comes from a pig's intestines. You know, pigs are very close genetically to human beings. And I know that, for example, as most of you know, I have a daughter with cystic fibrosis, and she and just about every other person with that condition has to depend on enzyme supplements taken from pigs in order to maintain their own health. So, you know, there are probably reasons why animals could and should be exploited for the benefit of the human race in terms of the food chain and such like, and that's just one of them. Now, that's not to say, you know, this whole idea of you know, animal horns being animals being killed, rhinoceros being killed for this sort of fictitious notion about the health benefits, particularly in the Chinese culture. You know, that in itself is absurd. I think that everything there is a role to be played, and it's a case of, you know, moderating it to a way that is socially acceptable, whereas right now it isn't in many cases. Some cases there are good examples of animal husbandry available out there. Some cases, some animals are treated better in some parts of the world than humans are. But certainly, I think, as with everything, it shouldn't be a blanket ban on anything, that there are reasons and justifiable reasons why animals should be exploited to the lowest possible degree for the benefit of us humans. And thanks again, Herb.
Can I just say a word, Carla?
Go ahead.
I mean, I obviously can't agree with you, Paul. Obviously not. But don't want to get into a polemic with you. But first of all, with regard to animal experimentation, what has happened has happened, and it may be, but it may well be that in the past, the kind of the advances that were made in medicine couldn't have been made without animal experimentation. I don't know about that. Certainly not the case now. It's certainly not the case now. Animals are used purely for reasons of cheapness now, not because other methods can't be used. And the second thing is, you know, why don't we sort of find less sort of cruel ways of slaughtering, of killing animals, and therefore allowing us to sort of eat meat with a clear conscience? Well, you know, I suppose all I'd say was, you know, can you imagine, can anyone imagine a cruelty-free slaughterhouse? I can't, frankly.
Adam, sorry, Howard, let me try this with you for this moral dilemma. If your life depended on you receiving treatment that was taken from an animal byproduct, would you accept it or wouldn't you?
Well, I don't think that's fair because it's a pure hypothesis, and you know, the situation does not arise. I mean, you know, you can hypothesize all sorts of unlikely things.
Well, let's hypothesize then. Let's do it. Let's hypothesize. In the event that your life depended on you receiving a byproduct from an animal, would you accept it, or would you allow yourself to wither away and die?
I would have to decide at the time, Paul.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Cool, Howard, and you're absolutely right. Let's not get into a tit for tat on this. Honestly, it was a terrific presentation, Howard. I thought you'd done tremendously well, and I thank you kindly for it. You're a good man. Cheers.
Okay, thanks, Paul. John Cumming?
Yes, I think this illustrates the difficulty of dealing with this thing in a moral fashion. We have to really be severely practical about it. That's not to say that we wouldn't be informed by some kind of morality, but we have to remember it's the morality of the oppressed people, the wage slaves. The morality of the capitalist is quite different. They see us as nothing other than livestock ourselves. We are human livestock, and with this special facility to be surplus value producing. So that's one of the things that comes to mind here. But the main reason why I asked to speak was I think the meat eating, it won't be resolved in present day society. Today, people eat meat largely out of habit. For a long time, I just thought, just due to tradition, that, where's the meat component here? You kind of expect it. And once you realise that, well, you don't really need to have it. Sometimes you can not have meat. Sometimes you will have it. I think there's no doubt about it that it really requires socialism before we can have a proper way of addressing these issues and developing a morality that is truly universal, and not the morality of the slaveholders or the morality of the religious maniacs who speak on behalf of God.
Thank you, John. Janet, is that you, Janet?
So many thoughts. People have inspired so many thoughts and this very interesting subject. I was thinking of, I think one of the last people said that about the working class don't, the owning class don't care how we are treated. And I did hear one person say a long time ago, if the working class were as held as well as many of the horses are, which are owned by the owning class, we'd be much better housed than the majority of them of us are, because their stables are lovely and well kept. The other aspect I'm thinking of, quite glad if golf withered away, because that would stop my neighbour sweeping his astroturf, using his electric cutters to do his hedge, and then going to the golf course for exercise. He could do some of the work in the garden and get the exercise that he thinks he needs, I think. The other aspect is something that Moggy said about sheep. Quite interested in that subject, because I have heard somebody say that sheep can be used, wool can be used as a method of insulation, and would be much better than the stuff that they do use at presses. I wouldn't know about that. I don't know whether wool is good as insulation or not. I suspect it might be if it was treated and wasn't, and mice weren't allowed to get into it. But so we could breed sheep for that sort of purpose and use the wool. But even then, they could be bred in a good way, and not as Moggy has said about the breeding of them at the wrong time of the year, which is quite horrible by the sound of it. The other thing I wanted to say was about the whales that get washed up on the shores. Many of those sorts of creatures are washed up, they say, because they're disorientated because of the noise of the big ships going by in the sea, and all the sound of the all the underwater sounds that make them lose their way. And I sincerely hope that if socialism is established, we won't have those massive oil tankers going along the coastlines, because that is, they need about five men to run them on these massive ships, and shipping all this oil around all the world. I don't think that will last forever and ever. The other thing I was thinking about was sentient. Somebody's used the word empathy, and I think if you think of any creature as sentient, and we wouldn't know, we don't know what pain they feel, you wouldn't want to actually think about what they might be feeling when what is happening to them is happening to them. That's quite horrifying to imagine. The other thing is bovine TB. That's been a lot of fuss about, especially in the West Country in Britain, just lately, because they're poisoning the animals, because they say they're spreading TB. Yet there is a way of, if it is such a big problem, there is a way of actually vaccinating, immunising the animals, so that they can't spread the TB. And would be much kinder and a pleasanter way of doing it rather than the way that they are killed. And I think the last thing I'll say is that a lot of people within capitalism have personal pets, and I'm sure I'm one of them, that has dogs and cats, because you can spend your love on them and they won't repudiate it or be nasty to you in any sort of way. And I think that many animals are owned for that sort of reason, that they give companionship. And I'm sure there's somebody that's written about the lack of companionship that there is in capitalism, which perhaps we would find when within socialism, we wouldn't have to rely on animals to provide it. I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. Mark.
Yes, I wanted to go back to the issue of the party case and how the issue of the environment and animal rights fits into our let's say work as a party. I think the animal rights movement and the environmental movement, just as before the women's movement or various other liberation movements, whether national or racial, they all are obviously in grave danger of ultimately being co-opted by capitalism, in some way tamed or directed in ways that are suitable for capitalism. So I fully agree with what Howard said, that of course these issues can't be solved within capitalism. I think on the other hand, just like some of these other movements have fed into our thinking, and you know, I think that we have a lot to learn from those movements, I actually think that it could well be that some combination of environmental concern with socialist consciousness could be the kind of movement that could take us towards the society that we've been talking about tonight. I think there is a certain danger of putting off everything to socialism. Mike Foster said something along the lines of, you know, in a socialist world, there will be different types of regions, which I'm sure there will be. There may be regions where people will eat meat, and there'll be regions where they may not. I wonder, would we be comfortable with saying, because a socialist world will be a free world, won't it? It'll be a world where people will be able to democratically decide what society they want. Would we be happy with saying there will be some societies where there may be slavery? There will be some societies maybe in this free world where women will be oppressed? I think we would... We couldn't bind anyone's hands, but we would certainly say the socialist world that we would want wouldn't be a world where there would be any oppression of any kind. And I would go back again to the word speciesism, and I think it's something that would be really worth us discussing at a later time, going maybe even that specific question. Do we actually believe there is such a thing as speciesism, just as there is such a thing as racism or sexism? I have to say, and I know that, of course, I don't mean to be an annoyance to anybody, but I think some of the comments made this evening are something along the lines of, oh, yeah, well, we do beat our wives. I'm not saying anyone said that. I'm just saying along the lines of that kind of flavor. But that's what we do in the working class. And of course, in socialism, no one will beat their wives. But let's not get too hung up on that issue. I think we just need to be a little bit careful that we kind of react on a too personal level to some of these questions, because there is the real fundamental question, which is, what right do we have to treat animals as a resource? Now, there is a question, what right do we have to treat the planet as a whole unthinkingly as a resource? But what right do we have to treat other sentient beings who we as socialists know are no different from us? They do not lack a soul. Where is our inherent right that whenever it suits our convenience, that we can just... we can just use them? There may have been a time in human history where humans couldn't have survived without, for example, eating meat. That time may have existed. I don't want to answer that question. But if it turns out that we no longer have to eat meat, for example, we no longer have to use animal products in the way that maybe was necessary in the past, but we choose to do so because that's our preference, and what right do we have to do that? I don't think that's a ridiculous question. Just like we don't shy away from other questions about what right do we have to behave in certain ways. And as a party, we say we try to model the new society. We say we don't believe in a society with leaders. Therefore, we're not going to have a party like other parties. So we actually do say that we want to model the kind of society in our relations to each other that we want to see in the future. Well, maybe we should also ask, how can we model that in relation to the animal world, the world of sentient beings of whom we're a part and we are not superior to? How can we model that in our behavior and attitudes as a party? And that means also, how can then we better intersect with the movement of people who are, let's say, rebelling against the inherited assumptions that we have had concerning our rights as human beings concerning animals? George Orwell said that that men treat animals in much the same way as the capitalists treat the proletariat. I think that's a thought worth thinking about.
Thank you, Mark. Maybe there's a talk there that you want to give at some point?
Definitely, yeah.
Dougie?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this question of morals, I think societies do have morals, but capitalist morals are kind of corrupt, really. You know, they say thou shalt not kill, then they'll go to war with Germany, or they'll go to war with Saddam Hussein, and, you know, they'll send people to the Falklands. But, I mean, you do have moral arguments in capitalism. I mean, you just have to look at the way free school meals has been portrayed, and the Tories have had to reluctantly give kids free school meals during half terms and things like that because of a moral outcry and one football player who happened to champion it, you know, Rashford or whatever. So, but I mean, one thing I'd like to say to Moggy, I remember reading Bill Bryson's book, and he talks about human beings being responsible for mass extinctions. And one of the things that happened in New Zealand, there was some rare birds that were flightless, and it was domestic cats that killed them off, right? You know, I mean, the last couple of birds were given to somebody as a present by a domestic cat. So, I mean, these things go on in capitalism, but human beings have been terrible for extinctions or whatever. He even talks about dodo birds being so stupid when they were clubbing one to death, the other one would turn up to see what was happening, and it would get clubbed as well, right? You know. So human beings have been responsible for a lot of extinctions in the wildlife or whatever. And it's still going on, right? Yeah.
Thanks, Dougie. Moggy, you want to come back in?
Oh, yes, please. Yes, just commenting on a couple of things. Yes, there was somebody who was talking about wool being used as insulation. Well, wool is absolutely marvellous for all sorts of things. The thing about wool is it doesn't burn, it smoulders. And so houses that have wool carpets, you know, if there's a house fire or something, they're not going to give off the toxic smoke and toxic fumes that acrylic carpets would do, and so on, this sort of thing. And but then the other thing I want to comment on is somebody was speaking about fox hunting a while ago. Over thousands of years, the human race has got some savage, wicked pleasure out of watching other people or animals getting killed. Years ago, they had the gladiators fighting each other, or gladiators fighting a lion. And then, of course, they had bullfights. And people would get a lot of pleasure out of seeing some poor bull getting murdered. And then, of course, fox hunting. Well, a lot of these things are being frowned on or being discontinued, but people still seem to get a lot of pleasure out of watching two guys in a boxing ring clouting the hell out of each other, and I can't see the pleasure in that. But I think it comes down to educating people that there are other pleasures in life apart from cruel pleasures. That there are other things you can get a lot of pleasure from rather than watching somebody getting hurt or getting murdered. And, you know, maybe there is a need for that sort of thing under capitalism. Under socialism, we wouldn't have that need. People could get pleasure in other ways. So that's all I've got to say on that one.
Yeah, I'd go along with that, Moggy. Mike Brown?
Yeah, thanks, Harriet, for quite an interesting discussion. I think you made some very good points about the use of animals for experiments on things like perfume, things like detergent, I think, and you gave a lot of examples. That seems to have been ignored by most of the comments. A lot of people seem to take a lot of these personal about, well, I'm not going to stop eating meat, or I like eating meat, or I like fishing, or whatever. We're talking about the world and the party. Now, I would go along with Paddy when he said, we should use more of the ethical arguments as well as the ecological arguments. I can't see any reason why we can't use the ethical and the ecological together. Leaving one and leaving them out is a bit stupid. It might be one of the reasons why we get so few votes. However, just a few things that we made. Moggy mentioned something about possums and all you know, that sort of had to be taken back or whatever. It was a bit off the point. The point is, what are animals and what are they for? It was fine to use sheep for wool. It's even fine to kill them and use them for your food. Humans have evolved having to eat meat. There are places in the world where they have to eat fish and meat. The people in the Arctic used to rely specifically on the fish and the meat to survive. That's not going to change too much. I know these days that they get fed whatever's brought in by plane and a lot of processed food. But there are places when people are going to have to eat meat. And there's no problem with that. We're not going to stop everybody from eating meat. If you want to eat meat, you can eat it raw if you want to. I don't mind. You would. You wouldn't survive very long. But it's the question of using animals, experiments. The real issue here, the way animals are used, like they're just commodities. I think we should, along with Paddy, are you saying we should use ethics and the ecological argument for a socialist society? That's all.
Thanks, Mike. Paddy?
I'd just like to revisit this question that I think Mark asked, which is, what right do we have to experiment on animals? I think this is one of the difficulties with taking a moral sort of position, because, you know, what I feel doesn't really translate into what you feel, and what you feel doesn't really translate into what he or she feels. It's difficult to have a common, you know, currency or common language when you're talking in terms of morals. But with, you know, facts and evidence and science, it's much, much more easy to establish a communication. So on the question of, you know, animal testing, for example, science takes a pragmatic view rather than a moral approach. So with animal testing, incidentally, I don't really agree with Howard when he says that animal testing is purely because it's cheaper. It's not actually because it's cheaper, I don't think. It's because it's ethically acceptable. And of course, what's ethically acceptable largely depends on the state of the technology available at the time. So I'll just give you, for instance, the man who's probably single-handedly saved more lives in world history than any other person is a man called Edward Jenner, who devised the first smallpox vaccination in the late 1700s. Now, he didn't have much technology available. He tested on children. He tested on all the local children, including his own son. Today, he would be struck off and probably jailed for what he did. But as I say, he's saved more people, more lives than any other person who's ever existed. Now, would socialism test new drugs on children or human beings? Surely not. Surely they would make a pragmatic decision that if they're going to have to test it on some organic animal, they're not going to test it on their own children and sons and daughters. Drugs have to be tested somehow. And incidentally, if you don't know this, the coronavirus vaccines have been tested on animals. The Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine have been tested on mice and macaques. They've also used other types of monkeys, rats, you name it. Some of the vaccines have sort of fast-tracked and skipped the tests altogether, but most of them have been tested on animals. So just bear that in mind when you're going to take the vaccine. It's a simply a pragmatic decision. And one other thing about testing is that one of the sad things about it in capitalism is to do with regulatory systems demanded by governments. Now, these regulatory systems exist mainly because of the threat of litigation if something goes wrong. And what this in turn means is that when somebody wants to develop a new drug, and by the way, roughly 90% of new drugs aren't new at all. They're copies of old drugs that are not allowed to use the same recipe because those are patented. So they have to get round the old patents by retro engineering and just changing one or two ingredients. But because of that, to get around the patents, they have to go through the whole testing procedure, which means a shitload of animal testing all over again for a drug that just does the same thing that some other drug already does. This is pure nonsense that wouldn't exist in socialism. This is patent laws. This is intellectual property laws causing unnecessary animal testing. Which, as Howard's already pointed out, this animal testing doesn't work. I was just curiously, I just had a quick look to see what the fail rate was. And apparently the FDA, the Food and Drug Agency in America, reported in 2004 that 92 out of every 100 drugs that successfully pass animal trials subsequently fail human trials. One of the most famous examples of that, of course, is thalidomide, but there's lots of other examples where the animal testing actually didn't guarantee any success. But fortunately, technology is coming up with newfangled artificial, what are called human relevant testing systems. They don't use animals. They're human relevant in some other way that I've not actually found enough about. But what that means, encouragingly, hopefully, in the future, is that this might not be a problem that socialism has to deal with in the future.
Okay.
Thanks, Paddy.
Yes. Can I say a quick word, Lorna? Sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead, Howard.
I watched a film earlier this week called The Windermere Children. Some of you may have seen it on television, about these kids from concentration camps who were brought to Britain and housed for several months in Windermere to sort of try and rehabilitate them. And there was a sort of telling thing in the film when one of them said, "I'm only here now because I stole a piece of bread from another boy who was too weak to prevent me." And, that ties in with what Paddy said just now. All sorts of pragmatic things may arise in one's life in which one does things that one, isn't particularly proud of. And, you've got to take decisions. I mean, I suppose it goes back to a certain extent to the dilemma that Paul presented me with earlier. And in fact, I've just read an article. Paddy mentioned the coronavirus vaccine testing, an article called "The Ugly Truth About Coronavirus Vaccine Testing." And the writer begins by saying, "I won't be accepting the vaccine after what has been done to so many defenseless animals. It feels wrong to me." Yeah, one has to take a sort of personal decision on that. But having said that, again, to sort of go back to what Paddy said, the vast majority of these experiments are totally unnecessary. They are totally unnecessary. And, either they're not necessary or they can be done by other means. And in a socialist society, hopefully these sort of pragmatic choices will be very few and very far between.
Yeah. Joel.
Hello. This is a question for Mark. Mark mentioned that the Socialist Party could learn from other organisations. I mean, would it be too long for him to sort of elaborate on that? And he also used the word soul. I mean, which did he use it in the religious sense? Anyhow, that's my question.
Should I just answer directly? Is that all right, Carla?
You can, Mark, if you keep it fairly short, because we've got a couple of people want to come in.
Yeah, well, yes, I did. I used the word soul in the religious sense, just meaning that the dichotomy between the human and animal world in our civilization is based upon the idea that we have souls and they don't. That was all I was saying, and we of course don't believe that as socialists. Secondly, if we want socialism to be brought in democratically, then there needs to be a majority of people who feels that socialism is the answer to the ills of the world. And there are a lot of passionate people in the animal rights movement and in the ecology movement, the Save the Planet movement, whose energy, if it's not directed against capitalism, is ultimately going to be wasted. So I think we can learn from them about what some of the issues are, as I've learned a lot tonight. I appreciate the various comments on various issues. And that's what I meant by we can learn and we can integrate that into our criticism of the class society that we live in.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you both. Pat.
Right. Thank you. Right, I'm not sure where to start. There's different thoughts whether I'm going to be able to get them out clearly. We don't, when we're talking about socialism, we don't start in a vacuum. We start from various problems. And one of the things when I actually joined the party was because there were so many different problems and I felt that I couldn't get involved with all of them. And then the idea that understanding the economic basis of the problems, that how the working class is oppressed, if you like to put it like that, that understanding seemed to be the thing, the key thing that had to be understood in order to deal with the problems. And this sort of whether there are ethical arguments, ecological arguments, it depends what problem that you are dealing with at the moment. And there are so many of them, and it's really overwhelming. But I would like to say something in defense of the putting the economic basis of the case, because I find the economics case exciting. I find the whole case for socialism has always been an exciting thing, even if for personal reasons I haven't always been able to be involved. But that isn't something that should be come across as cold, and it may be just the understanding the basics of the economics, value and all the rest of it, I suppose maybe doesn't come over as flowery, if you like, as dealing with some of the other problems. But that idea that the economics is the key to solving the problems, to solving the whole multiplicity of problems, I find that really is an exciting thing and not cold at all. And how socialism would actually find the way through the problems, it depends. You have to start from where you are, and we would have to start from whatever however the system is at the time when you get the majority. And in fact, that sort of the excitement of getting to that stage would be the part of the momentum for solving the problems. But just we've never put it forward as an idealized thing, but as a way to solving the problems. But it's for this completely different kind of society with people, the problems wouldn't be problems in the same way, and how people would live together and what people would choose to do would have to be not economically. I've got economics on the brain, as it were, at the minute, but democratically dealt with what people felt that would the environment could withstand, and what if I just say that it's got to be the what would be in human interest and what would be in human interest, because we're part of the whole animal kingdom, part of the whole world. What's it would be in our interest in a socialist society would surely be the best answer for animals as well. And just as an odd little thing, I wonder if the sheep who aren't shorn, whether that wouldn't be a problem if they hadn't been bred to grow long coats. I don't know how much of the wool production is because they've been bred for their coats, and whether they weren't bred in that way, whether you know if they weren't shorn, they wouldn't get their coats that were too heavy. So I'll finish on that odd bit.
Thank you, Pat. Howard, do you want to? We've been talking for about an hour and a half now discussing. I wondered whether or not you wanted to finish, or if anyone that hasn't actually come in, if anyone wants to come in for the last few moments. Howard?
Well, just to say, I think it's been an excellent discussion. Lots and lots of points have been brought up, which will give people and myself serious food for thought. But I suppose that if I want to sort of end on a personal note, as I started on a personal note, what I would say with regard to socialism is, and the kind of socialist society we're looking for, is I'd like to ask the question, how many people in a world where they were not compelled to work for wages will be prepared to continue killing animals when other essential and more rewarding work needs to be done? That's my sort of final word.
Okay, thanks, Howard. Thank you for a great talk and discussion, and thank you, comrades, for a great discussion. Are we wrapping this up now?
Can I just say something?
Yes, Lorna.
I'd just like to say something to Pat, actually. I'd like to say that for whatever Pat's saying, I always remember you, Pat, for your compassion. Everything that you're saying about socialism is incredible, but also I always find you, and always when you speak, a really compassionate, wonderful woman. And I'm really glad that that we're hearing you back now in the party.
Yeah, hear, hear.
Yeah, hear, hear, yeah.
Thank you.
Ditto.
Okay, shall we say good night?
Night.
Thank you very much,
everyone.